Okay, så prøver jeg en gang til. Velkommen til, jeg skal præsentere den næste taler, og jeg vil gøre det på engelsk. The next speaker is Peter Fischer from Regensburg University. And Peter is here to talk about the psychology of scam. Before he starts, just a couple of practical bits of information. If at any time you have a question for Peter, just please raise your hand and I will come to you with the one functioning microphone and you can ask the question. Okay? So, thank you, Peter.
Perfect. Yeah, thank you for the kind introduction. Thank you for the invitation to Denmark and to the Danish Crime Prevention Day. The title is the Social Economic Psychology of Internet Scam Fraud in Explorative Empirical Research Program. There's some research into techniques, so what do scammers do, what do the fraudsters do, and also there's research, are there specific types of persons who react, with increased probability who react to scam correspondence, but we thought that's not the whole game. We also need to know about the psychological roots. Why do people respond to such types of communications? What are the psychological determinants? So in psychology, is the science of experience, experience and behavior of individuals and of groups of individuals. And experience, we mean by experience cognition, so what people think. Yeah. So for example, my name is Peter Fischer, this is cognition. Yeah. And if you think about yourself and you experience positive emotion or negative emotion or anger, stuff like this, this is so emotion, this is the second huge type of experience. And very often cognitions and emotions come together. We do not know whether sometimes, in some cases, we think before we feel. In other cases, we feel before we think. And there are even cases where we react or behave, and afterwards the thinking and the emotional reaction comes. So in every direction, we are still we are disciplined. We are only 100 years old. We are still on a level you can't compare to medicine, for example, or you can't compare to physics. It's really still a black box what's going on in our brain. So, but the last 100 years, we had some insights into how psychology of human works, and we try to transfer these basic knowledge about psychology to the phenomenon of scam reactions. Yeah, special thanks. So this is a project. I was for 2 years, 3 years in at the University of Exeter, 2008 to 2010. So please excuse me, my English is a bit rusty. So in Bavaria, you're not so much forced to speak English every day. So I try to get out my old good English from Exeter. So, and Professor Stephen Lee, Kath Evans worked in this project, and this was a project financed by the OFT, this Office for Fair Trading, and they are the first contact institution in the UK. For example, if you lose money by a scammer or a scam communication, then you can call OFT, and they try to do something. So. A bit pessimistic because you cannot do too much. Yeah? So the scammers on some islands far away from Europe. So the legal perspective is not too good. And we also had a coworker from GfK Infratest, a big German statistical group. And so we tried to do some sound and sophisticated stats on our data. Yeah, theoretical background, economic psychology has contributed to the understanding of crime by treating perpetrators. So this is one big field. So they try to look, so what are attributes of the perpetrators? Why do they do what they do? Yeah, there's some research into that. And also there's some research on the victims. So who does react? For example, are these older people or younger people? Have they some kind of cognitive disabilities? So a low IQ or higher IQ? So there's some research into that. And we thought that's not enough because I can already tell you that. So we did not find any personality factors. We did not find that the older ones react more often than the younger ones or medium age. So we couldn't find any psychiatric pre-existing psychiatric disorders or something, you would say, okay, someone who is depressive or who is a psychotic would react more than a psychologically healthy person. We did not find any point on pre-existing psychiatric disorders. So normal people just react to scam communications. Yeah, the field of work, scams. What are scams? Scams are mass marketed frauds. We have many different varieties, types of scams. And the perpetrators have two strategies. Either they send out many, many millions of emails and hope to get a little amount of money of many people. So if you get from 2 million responders, you get, say, 15 or 1 euro per respondent, so you get rich. As well as there's another strategy, a small number of respondents, they try to focus on specific groups of potential responders and try to get much money. So we also found in the UK cases where really one old lady, for example, completely lost more than £50,000. So all she had, then afterwards she also needed to sell her house in order to pay the bills. So she reacted to each scam and to each communication. So there are really severe cases up to suicide, and really scamming is no, this is not a little crime, it's a very severe crime and can cause very huge psychological and social problems to the victims. Yeah, so these are typical scams. I have just some examples here. Congratulations, Mrs. Wilson, you won £15,000, yeah, so just react within 24 hours. Or here, winnings confirmation. This is all material from the OFT. They gave us hundreds of materials, what they collected from victims. You won £10,000, and here you can see, yeah, contact me immediately. This is always a very important factor. So also when you buy a car, I mean, I don't know, when you bought your last car, it's always the same. As always when I buy a car, and I buy cars since 20 years, or more than 20 years, always the car seller tells me, oh, there's another person, and we are rather in progress, and perhaps on Saturday he will take the car, and you should be quick. So it's always the same. And this is a psychological trick also. For example, in Germany, I have an O2 contract on my mobile phone, and always if you have very special actions from O2, so get 10 euro less on your account, but this offer is only until the end of April, and end of April you still you get it even cheaper. This is just a scarcity effect. We call this in marketing psychology scarcity effect. A product just if you have the feeling that it's a scarce product, then you are more inclined to buy it. So then, yeah, make real money from home today. Also, get rich quick scams. We have this very often in Germany, and in all kinds of newspapers, you find this. Earn 5,000 euros a week additionally. So, and of course, and then there are many responders. So, I mean, this is a dream, earning 5,000 euros additionally a week. So, this is very attractive. Or want to make big money investing in stocks and shares, penny stock investments. Who has seen the film Wolf of Wall Street? Leonardo DiCaprio. So when there was a big crash, then he worked for this little firm and they just sold penny stocks. So they have huge spreads and they really, it's just a scam, some kind of scam, these penny stocks. And also here, lottery award notification, final notice, you won the lottery, so please react. Or fat off capsules, so miracle cures. And this is a real perversion. So they just play with the illnesses and the medical problems of people. So, and they're not only fed off capsules. Also, you can heal all kinds of cancer and severe diseases. So, medical cures is another type of scam. Then, congratulations! You have won a top prize. It's always the same. Guaranteed winners, life-changing wealth. So these are typical scams you from the UK, but it's the same in Germany and I guess in Denmark. So it's always the same type. So we have three possible research approaches. First of all, demographic psychometric approach. So identify people unusually likely to become victims. So as I said in the beginning, are the older ones with, for example, reduced cognitive abilities or dement people, are they more prone, more likely to react than younger ones? Then also there's a second stream of research on descriptive, so characterize scam materials. So what's in the scam materials? I will also show you, we also investigated the scam materials. We used text mining procedures, which is a very sophisticated type of statistics to count words and make meaning of different types of words. So in order to employ scam filters. Yeah, for example, at the University of Regensburg, we have a huge unit which just is responsible for the internet and the computers, and they always update their scam filters. So if they find specific words, then it goes to a special list, and then you get once a month you get this list, and you can say, okay, is this spam or scam, or is this a real email? So this is very practical and technical, but it's not psychological. It's just very descriptive. And our approach, mechanistic approach, so identify psychological processes involved in scam compliance. So what's going on in the brain, in the cognitive system of us all, when we react to something like that? Or why do we believe sometimes this is not a scam, this is real, and why do we sometimes recognize it as a scam? So this is some kind of perception task. Yeah. In psychology, we often ask work with perception tasks, and a scam is nothing else than a perception task, and you need to press the button no, so I don't believe. So, and sometimes people press the button yes, and that's the problem, and this was our research focus: when do they press the button yes? So, and also it's like in the medical discipline, if you know why a specific illness arises, so what's the reason for it, then we can develop better countermeasures. Yeah? So not only descriptive or just working on the surface, but if you know what's the root of the problem, then we are at least in a better position to develop countermeasures. So yeah, which frameworks did we use? So we, scientific psychologists, we always need a theory. Yeah? So a framework in which we embed our research, from where we derive hypotheses. Why do we expect something to happen in the future? First of all, we had communication theory, very simple communication theory, is 50, 60 years old. You'd say, okay, Fisher, this is not very new to us, but it's very powerful communication theory. And then also perhaps you would say, okay, this is psycho stuff, communication, very soft factors. Communication theory is very technical. For example, if you have a computer here and I have my iPhone and they communicate via Bluetooth, every technician would say, oh, great, this is a great achievement of the modern digital world, great technique. Yeah? If I say people communicate, the two persons communicate, and one is the sender and the other is the receiver, you would say, okay, this is soft stuff, please go to personal development and not very important. But you need to imagine we have 100 billion neurons in one brain, so 100 billion, and they all can connect in various ways. So besides the universe, there's a big mystery, what's going on in the universe and what's our place in the universe. The next big mystery is what's going on here in these 100 billion neurons. And so communication, from a psychological, technical perspective, is very technical. Yeah? You have a source, you have a receiver, you have a message, you have a medium. Yeah? We also, it's very different if you get a written text or a spoken text, whether there are some pictures triggering emotions or not. Yeah? So it's communication is very, very technical if you really think honest about it. And our second framework was errors of judgment. So this is a big research area in psychology. So also the Nobel Prize was won by a psychologist 12 years ago, one psychologist and one economist. So they did much research into errors of judgment and why do we fall for specific errors. And this is very important. And also, if you have disasters like Chernobyl, yeah, or the Challenger crash in 1987. So most technical disasters are always a problem of decision making. So the people in this, for example, Chernobyl, they tried a new system and they just implemented the system, and then in the control center you had different warning lamps went on, and the engineers and the responsible guys, they just thought, okay, this is a computer problem, this is a technical problem, there's nothing going on really at the reactor. Yeah? So they lost 20 minutes of time. So they, 20 minutes of time because they had the wrong hypothesis. The hypothesis, they made the wrong decision, judgment error. So if these 20 minutes would have been saved, perhaps Chernobyl wouldn't have been that big problem as it turned really out then. So most technical disasters, also now in the German Wings crash in Germany a couple of weeks ago, which was very dramatic. So it also was a decision error. So the medical doctors and the psychologists, they just didn't recognize that this guy had a depression, this guy was suicidal. Yeah. So most, and also Lufthansa, they did a huge research, and they claimed 80% of all the crashes, the plane crashes, 80% the main cause is human factor. Yeah. So problem of decision making, problem of communication between two persons or a group of persons. So human factor is the problem. Yeah. Not so much the computer and the technical world. Yeah, errors of judgment are deviations from rational choice. So there's a big debate in psychology. Is there anything rational about humans? So we would say in psychology, no, humans are at all not rational. They are rationalizing organisms, yeah, and cognitive systems, but there's no rationality. The economists would say, yeah, there is a rationality out in the world and also in human behavior. It's a bit of a difference. Then explained by cognitive and social psychological processes, and there are two types of errors, or how errors can be triggered. One is motivational, so if some feelings are involved. Yeah? So for example, if you lost much money in the stock market, then you have negative emotions. Yeah? And what we know, if these negative emotions mount up, you tend to invest even more into the stock market, because you say you want your losses back. Yeah, this is prospect theory. This was the Nobel Prize and some cost effect stuff like that. And then we have cognitive effects. So these are effects. You think you are rational and you think you do the right thing, but you make a cognitive error, yeah, so a computing error. So and very often both types or both psychological sources go together in errors. So yeah, we said to fall for a scam is always an error of judgment and motivation and cognitive reasons. And we also said, and what we found, the scammers are very sophisticated. I don't know whether they study psychology, but they use these techniques. Yeah? Then they know about the psychology, how their words, the psychological implications of the words, whether they trigger emotions, whether they trigger motivational processes, whether they trigger cognitive processes, how to trigger behavior. Yeah? I will show you that in a minute. These are different motivational sources of errors of judgment. For example, sensation seeking. Yeah? People who dive out the plane and free climbing, these are sensation seekers. Everybody knows that if you do something risky and you survive the risky thing, then you have high adrenaline levels in your blood, and this really feels good. So yeah, so sensation seeking is one motivational cause for behavior. Yeah? Then visceral influences, basic human desires, needs, greed, fear, pain, desire to be liked. Yeah, so social desires, I want to be a smart person, I want to be a rich person, greed, yeah. Stock markets, mostly you lose at the stock market when greed eats brain. So, yeah. So then ego depletion, self-regulation problems are at stake. Self-regulation is a very central topic, very basic topic in psychology. For example, self-regulation, when you say I want to lose 10 kilos, yeah, so I want to lose 10 kilos, so I don't eat any cakes anymore, I don't eat sweets, and I don't go to McDonald's and stuff like this, so no fatty stuff. So, and then you are really starving, and then I give you a Big Mac. Yeah. So, and you're really starving, and here's a Big Mac, or here's a huge cake. Yeah. So, and then you need to self-regulate not to eat the cake, yeah, not to eat the Big Mac. So this is self-regulation. And very often, what we found, scams just tempt you. Okay, 15,000 pounds, 50,000 pounds, 1 million, yeah? Very tempting for us, yeah? And then you need to self-regulate, to say, okay, no, I guess this is just a fake, yeah? So, and you need to be rational, and this is self-regulation. So we found this is very often a problem with scams. Then liking, similarity, also, what we know is that the scammers use similarity cues. Yeah? So they just pretend that they think as you think, that they feel as you think, that they have the same worldview as you have. And people who have the same worldview are automatically sympathetic to us. We like people who have the same worldview. So, yeah, so you see this in political parties, you see this in organizations, you see this in private and partner relationships. Yeah. So partners, so in Germany at least 40% of all marriages are getting divorced a couple of years later. So what we know, the risk for divorce, for getting divorced is much lower if you have partners who have a similar attitude, a similar worldview, similar hobbies. So similarity is very attractive to us. Commitment, desire for consistency. What we also know, I did 15 years of research on consistency behavior. What we know, also Cialdini is here, a great social psychologist who did much research on that foot in the door principle. Yeah. For example, someone wants to sell insurance to you. Another example, yeah, you have a new car and you need a car insurance. So this is a case, a real case from my life. Yeah. So you need a car insurance, which is just a standard thing. Yeah, car insurance, you get a key code, and then you get with this code to the local administration, and then you get you can drive your car. So after when I finished with the car insurance thing, then he said, "Oh, Mr. Fischer, you have two little children. Perhaps you need also an accident insurance, and perhaps you need also additional pension insurance, and perhaps your wife also needs an accident insurance." Afterwards, really, I went out with four new, yeah, besides the car insurance, with four new types of insurances. Yeah. So, and then as after the first month, I saw my bank account, and they really it was really expensive, these four new insurances. So, and again, I canceled that. But I didn't think about. So I didn't think about in the situation. It was so positive, and it was such a nice guy. It was foot in the door. Yeah, he sold me one thing, so the door is open to sell all the universe of insurances. Yeah? So this is an effect, foot in the door effect from Bob Cialdini. Mood regulation: when you react to a scam, you feel good. Yeah? So perhaps it's real. Perhaps I get the 10,000 pounds now. Impatience and also cognitive exhaustion. What we know is when people are cognitively exhausted, they have lower scores on the IQ test, for example. Yeah? And if you have lower scores on the IQ test, then also you are more prone to react to a scam because you are more prone not to recognize that it's fake. Yeah? So cognitive abilities are very important. Then, yeah, cognitive sources, potential cognitive sources for errors of judgment, reduced or low ability. So what we find, so older people have a problem. For example, my grandma, when she died, we checked all her documents and insurances. What we found from one German insurance company, we found two times the same type of insurance. It was an accident insurance, which is not very cheap for an 85-year-old lady. So, but the same insurance company sold this old lady two times the same type of insurance. And I can't imagine that in a digital world this is not possible to recognize that there's a double booking, you know. So, but this is also, I mean, legal organizations sometimes also use these scamming techniques. Yeah? So also financial crisis, when you see 2008, 2009, yeah, old ladies bought Lehman treasuries and stuff like this. So very risky stocks, only for the bonus. Yeah? So scamming is not always illegal, unfortunately. Then framing. Yeah? We also know if something is framed, there's a loss. Yeah? people are more prone to get more risk into it. Yeah? If something is framed as a gain, yeah, then people are more conservative. So that's the reason why we lose on the stock market and we do not get the big gains. We sell the good stocks too early. Yeah? And if we have a stock which is in the loss, we buy more of the stock. Yeah? So this is the framing effect from Kahneman and Tversky, and the scammers also use these techniques. Then false consensus, similarity effects, I told you about that. Then authority, on each scam you find a big type of, this is UK government, German legislation, and federal stuff, you know, so of course all fake, but this is an authority cue. And what authority can do, we noticed, for example, from the Milgram experiment, I don't know whether you know, some of you perhaps know the Milgram experiment. It was an experiment where people should give electroshocks to another person, which was only fake, but people thought it's real. And there was a guy with a white, a medical doctor standing behind and said, okay, so high authority, you need to do this. It's very important for science that you administer these electric shocks. So, and 68% all over the world, in all cultures, from all different types of socioeconomic status, 68% of all participants went administered up to 350 volts, so the highest electroshock, which was potentially lethal. So authority, we are inclined to do what authorities say. Yeah? So this is a problem of child socialization. Child, for example, if you have children, so when the children, they eat up their meal, then it's okay, very good. Yeah? You give a positive, you show a positive reaction, so very good, well done. If they don't eat up the meal and say, okay, no, this is not okay, you should do it. So you criticize the child. You have a positive reaction when the child does what you want the child to do. You criticize the child if the child does not what you want to do. And that's the problem. In Germany, we have always the problem, civil courage, moral courage. That's the reason why we do not have so much moral courage, because we are in child socialization, we get the positive reaction mainly only for when we do what the authority says. Yeah? And when we deviate from what the authority says, we get no positive reaction. So that's the reason why there is no moral courage, or so low levels of moral courage. We did much research into that. Then alter casting sources take up a role which nudges recipient into a complementary role. So imagine what you would do at my place. Yeah, so such role-playing, cognitive role-playing, they use these techniques. Positive illusions, people overestimate their abilities, they overestimate their intelligence. When I ask you, whom of you would say, I am more intelligent than the average person all over the world, so 7 billion people. Yeah, so who would say I'm more intelligent and more sympathetic than the average person? Who would say that? So hands up. Most of you, yeah. Me too. So and so, but it's a problem. What we find also, you can put this down to are you a better car driver than the average person, and so on and so on. But we find 80% in the mean are better than the average person. This does not work statistically, yeah, because 80% cannot be better than the other 50%. So this is a positive illusion which keeps us healthy. Yeah? So when you go to psychiatry and you watch depressive people, so they have no sense for positive illusions. They are very realistic. We call this depressive realism. Yeah? So they correctly estimate the probability that they get cancer, that they die tomorrow, all the bad stuff, what we try to not think about. Yeah? This is a positive illusion, not to think about how risky life is. Yeah? So, and we get depressive, yeah? Or at least it's a side effect of depression to be realistic. Yeah? And overconfidence, also when you buy a stock, so this is the best stock, this stock will go up. So this is really an overconfidence effect. Yeah? When we show behavior, we are overconfident that this was the right type of behavior. And sunk cost, this is the last cognitive problem. For example, in Germany, we had the Schürmann-Bau. I mean, I guess you don't know this. This is 20 years ago. So the German government built a huge new government building. Yeah, it was in the near of Cologne. and they already invested 200 million euros. Yeah. So then the Rhine goes over the tides. Yeah. There was a big rain and some, and then completely destroyed the building. So and then there were two possibilities: either to completely start new, so everything is gone, so we start new again 200 millions, or we try to fix it. Yeah. So we try to fix what's left. So, but this is 300 million euros. So, and what did they do? They invested 300 million euros because they couldn't. That it was just so suffering that they lose these 200 millions. They even spend 100 million more to come to the same endpoint than if they just say, okay, that's it. We just start to build it up new. So, this is the sunk cost effect. We throw good money after bad money. That's the sunk cost effect. Yeah, we did four studies in the UK. 2008, 2009, 2010, and we did depth interviews. So I'm an empirical psychologist, and interviews is not so my business because interview is rather weak. It's the weakest type of data you can have. If I ask you something about, okay, how do you feel today, and what are your experiences in life, and blah, 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 then you tell me something, and we talk half an hour, and then afterwards I have several pages of what you told me, and then I try to find a summary, what's your cognitive idea of the world. So, and then I can read into that very much, yeah, I can read into that nothing. So I can read, this is very weak data, but in this area where no research has been going on, the past, you need the interview as an explorative starting point. So in order to get some hypothesis, why do these people react? Yeah? So if you have no hypothesis, you can't do the statistical good stuff of research. So correlational studies, experimental studies, and stuff like that. Then we also use text mining procedures. Text mining is very important new technique in statistics. For example, I guess you wondered, for example, when I'm on Spiegel Online, so the German online newspaper, Spiegel Online, so I always wonder, so I always get car advertising on the side, yeah? And my wife, she always gets advertising from some cosmetic stuff. So this is text mining, yeah? You leave traces on the internet, on your behavior, and you fill in some forms, and these qualitative traces they use and use statistically to predict your behavior. So this is text mining. And we did this with the scan materials we get from the OFT, and we did it also with the interview text, so we tried to make better data out of the weak interview data. Then we did a correlational study in Exeter. We sent out 1,000 questionnaires. It was really quantitative, so on scales 0 to 10, where we can do all the sound statistic stuff. And finally, the problem with correlational studies is that you have no cause and effect. So you have, smoking and lung cancer. This is a correlational relationship. Of course, smoking, now we know smoking is the cause, mainly the cause for lung cancer, but in the 60s, 70s, there was not too much data on this. This was just a correlation. And in the 60s, and Marlborough, for example, I think 10, 15 years ago, they still said this is just a correlation, so we do not know what's the cause. And of course, you can't do an experiment and say, okay, 1,000 people, you start smoking with 15, and the others, you're not allowed to smoke, and then we look 50 years later who survives. Yeah. This is ethically not probable, not feasible, of course. Yeah. So, but lung cancer is really the cause for the young guys. Yeah, the cause for lung cancer is really smoking. So. 9 out of 10 lung cancer patients are smokers. Yeah. So in this case, we need an experiment, and we did a huge experiment. We sent out 10,000 faked scam materials in the UK. It was very tricky because the UK and the ethical stuff is very tricky. You can't compare to Germany. Yeah, Germany is much easier to do research than in the UK or the US, for example. You have different laws. So, but we manipulated different types of scam, yeah? So where we put in our results from the previous studies, and we really manipulated. So the one gets an emotional trigger, the other one gets no emotional trigger. And then we looked whether the respondent is better with emotional trigger than with the non-emotional trigger. So I will come to that in a minute. Yeah, study one, interviews, falling for a scam. In the UK, we had 30 victims, and especially in the UK, you always need to send two interviewers to one interviewee because you have some shaky areas. Yeah, so we had did many interviews in the area of Manchester, Liverpool, so not the best areas to be. So yeah, and it's just for security reasons. I also learned that. So, but what did they tell us? People who look back on it, so we, as something they couldn't have realized, they say, okay, there was nothing really that made me suspicious at all. So nearly each victim said that, so they didn't realize it was a scam. Then also people who with hindsight realized that they should have known, I don't know why I was so gullible, so they really were ashamed, that so they were ashamed, oh, could I be so stupid and react to this stuff, yeah? And also some of them that told us, I knew it was a scam, but I felt 20 pounds, it's just worth the gamble. Yeah, and also the UK, the English guys, they're really gamblers, you know, so they like the gamble. Yeah, they like to little input, huge output. So this is very, very much a thinking there. So it's just a gamble. So okay, they knew it, it's a scam, but I take the gamble. So this was the main findings from the interviews. Then also we had here from the OFT different types of scams. We had 62 advance fees, clairvoyance, international sweepstakes, European price draws, get rich quick scams, and so on and so on. And we used this text mining procedure. This was a very sophisticated software. It costed more than 20,000 euros to use this for 1 year, so it's really high-end stats. So, and what we found mainly, we find words, the word we found most often, of course, is money. Yeah, it's always about the money, but also social contact. So, yeah, in most scams, you find words and meanings around social contact, liking, similarity, and all this social stuff. So the social psychologist is really in the right place in this research area. And at higher levels, what we found in the text mining procedure, it's about commitment. Yeah, if you, as I said, the foot in the door principle. If you get scammed and then you make a call back, and normally the scammer has won, if you make the call back or if you answer the email, then you have this foot in the door principle and people try to be consistent what they already did in the past. So commitment, then trust and security, authority cues, we find very often, then relationship cues, liking, similarity, social contact. Yeah, interviews, do victims make known types of errors? As I said, taking a gamble was very often the case. Then being in two minds, so I should have known it better, but I also tried to do it. So yeah, very often we notice from ourselves that we do something, yeah, where we know, okay, I shouldn't do this, but for some curious reason, I do it. Yeah? So this is some kind of inconsistency. This is being in two minds. Then does knowledge help? What we found, interestingly, knowledge doesn't help. Yeah? People who have an idea about the stock market works have an increased probability to fall for a stock market scam, yeah? And have a reduced probability to fall for a horse betting or a lottery scam or a get rich quick or a miracle cure scam. So if you have pre-knowledge or pre-existing experience in a specific area, you're much more prone to react to a scam in this area than if you have no pre-existing knowledge. This was very counterintuitive, but it's very easy to explain. If someone sends a lottery scam to me and says, okay, I'm not interested in lottery playing, but I'm if someone sends a stock scam, I'm interested in stocks. So perhaps this is real. So this is a very, very human process. So even though it's very counterintuitive, it's very logic that we found this. Yeah, then study three, do victims make known types of errors? We used the data from the interviews and from the text mining and went out to 1,000 households in Exeter in the southwest of the UK and tried to get more quantitative data. And we asked, have you ever been a victim of scam communication or not? And when yes, which types of processes? Can you remember what you thought, what you felt, what was in there? And what we again, we could, what we again found, there was very often trust. I believed what they say, was reliable. So authority cues, behavioral commitment. You did one little step and then the other step followed. The need for consistency, feelings to be liked by the scammers. Yeah, so similarity, attraction effect. And also impressions of scarcity and visceral triggers. So very often they work with stuff like, imagine what you could do with these £50,000. You could buy a Porsche or a Ferrari, yeah, and stuff like this. So they what we also call alter casting. They just put you in the future. So imagine what you could do with this money. So and then our cognitive cinema starts, the cognitive film starts, and we think about the future and when we how is it to drive a Ferrari or a Porsche. Yeah, so they work with these cognitive effects. And in we had two waves, we had similar results in the second wave. And so this was very good for us because we just confirmed the qualitative data from the first two studies with the quantitative data. So this gives just more reliability and reproducibility to our data. So you get all this stuff, so I don't want to bore you with too much statistics, but you can find here is for different effects, we have some sophisticated stats. Summary, what errors are scammers trying to induce? As I said, visceral factors are very important, authority cues are very important, time pressure is very important. So always when you want to buy something and the guy says, you are under time pressure, so then stop to buy this, because this is always a trick. Yeah? This is a psychology of selling trick, so time pressure, limited opportunity. And also don't react to something when you are in a cognitive exhaustion mode or something. Yeah? If you had a very stressy day and much stuff to do and you're really not cognitive on a high level, so don't react to something like that. So yeah, finally, study four, we did an experiment. And this is really funny because we tried to get ethics from the university. First of all, we didn't. We thought we can do it without ethics. So sent out 10,000 scam materials constructed by us at the University of Exeter and sent it out. And then we said, okay, perhaps we need ethics from the university. And the university said, okay, are you crazy? For example, when we said, okay, you won £10,000, so if you send it out to 10,000 persons in the UK, there's one, at least one already makes a phone call and buys the new Porsche. Yeah? So okay, £10,000 is not enough money for a Porsche, but you know, so this was the ethical problem that we if we do not tell the truth, the people start to spend the money or take a loan to spend the money, and then afterwards the university has a big problem, a legal problem, and UK legal system is very different, yeah, from at least from the German system. So it was very tricky. Then we went to the UK government ethical and UK psychological ethics council, and then at the end of the day we had a really very harmless form of scams, yeah, and where nothing bad could happen, and really nothing bad happened, of course, and we are glad that it didn't happen, but we at least have some kind of experiment, even though it's not as we planned it in the beginning. So, what we did, we sent out 10,000 scams, different versions. We completely manipulated the size of prize, 10K or 500K, so you won £10,000 or £500,000. Yeah? So does this make a difference in the reaction and the response rate? Then authority appeal, present or absent, whether there is some seal on it, so UK government or not. Yeah? And visceral triggers, present or absent, so whether we triggered emotions in the scam. Think about the future, think about what you could do with the money, think about driving a Porsche and stuff like this. And then we measured response rates. Do they respond, yes or no? Yeah? And also, we had then a little questionnaire in it where we tried to measure some other psychological processes. We had two different versions, plan B, plan C. This is not very important to you, but only very short. So plan B was they get a scam postal delivery, and they didn't, and then they really thought it's a scam, and then when they turned the page, there was University of Exeter, and this was just an experiment. And in the other version, we already debriefed them, they opened it, and then we already debriefed, so this is a University of Exeter scam, as it was more a cognitive approach. So we had two different versions. This was our scam. Congratulations, Mrs. Wilson. And what we found is, so we had hot and cold responses. We did a factor analysis, and what we found, the intention to respond and the dislike of scams is very important. People who say they have previously responded to a scam score higher on intention response and lower on dislike of scam factors. This is, show me your past behavior and I will predict, show me what you did in the past and I will tell you what you will do, what you will do in the future. So this is a strong psychological effect. So, and this is what we found here. Someone who already responded to a scam in the past has a higher intention to respond. He would be inclined to respond again. And he also, he likes that stuff somehow. Some kind of positive emotions arise when he sees stuff like this, taking a gamble. Substantive conclusions. Reactions to scams can be interpreted as a common decision error. So this framework works, and this is the first real good framework, empirical framework for this whole scam stuff. And the most important processes are really these visceral processes, so thinking about emotions you experience in the future when you get the prize. And also these appeals to authority. As we see all in the classic experiments in social psychology, authority is a very strong cue to trigger our behavior. Authority and these visceral cues. The methodological conclusions I skip because it's, I guess, not so important. It's more for the science. The only thing is, in our perspective, this is the first useful framework for this stuff. It's very applied, and many people talking about internet fraud and in the digital world, of course, every day more. But we have a good framework. This is communication theory and these decision errors. It's a decision error. And with this framework, you can really work in this area in the practical world. You can analyze these decision errors, and then you can make a good be a good consultant for somebody who is prone or who is vulnerable to react to stuff like this. So thank you very much.